listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, yes, living the dream once again on a fabulous Saturday. Hartman and Schwartz with you. We had a little warm-up there with the guys. Getting ready for our quick 2 hours here on this beautiful Saturday. By the way, an early happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. You included, Jeff. Got a big plan tomorrow for Father's Day?
Flying back home.
Flying back home, yes.
Is Father's Day, that's not really a thing, right? I mean, do dads celebrate Father's Day?
No,
I mean, do wives allow dads to celebrate Father's Day?
I will say this. You know, my father passed away in 2018. He had a long life, almost made it to 90. And, you know, as my father got older, obviously, you know, we put a little more stock into Father's Day. But as far as me, you know, with my kids, I think they'll make breakfast for me in the morning. That's about. I mean, I have a double shift tomorrow. I got all day radio and TV, so it's not much of a. I'm with you. It's not Mother's Day. I mean, Mother's Day is a big time holiday. Father's Day is an afterthought. I'll tell you what's not an afterthought. Is what's going on in these NBA playoffs, Jess? And we just hit it on with LeVar, TJ, and Plaxico. You know, I wasn't sure. You know, we talked about this whole idea of losing Steph Curry before the playoffs actually began in that play-in round, and then losing LeBron. Yep. Your two most marketable stars are gone right at the outset of these playoffs. And how are you going to generate interest in these series? Because on paper, they're not all that attractive. And then you add on the fact that you lose a Kyrie or lose a Kawhi. You're losing your star players to a variety of injuries. And yet, here we are. We got a couple of Game 7s coming up. We got to talk about what the Clippers did last night because that was downright history. So suddenly, incredible. I don't know about you, but I'm sort of getting into this whole NBA playoff scene.
The reason why I think we've had great games is a lot of teams have not been in this spot before, and they keep choking at the end of games. So the games end up being great, right? The Jazz last night, you're up 25 points on a Clippers team without their best player. And yes, it was in Los Angeles. It was the first time they had a full crowd. I mean, it was electric in Staples last night. First time they had a crowd. And you get a historic collapse. Like it and we've seen that. We've seen the Hawks collapse, the Sixers collapse. Like we've seen it happen, the Bucks as well. And I think that's what's made it fun for us to watch. If we had more experienced teams in these spots, they wouldn't do that, right? We know the experienced teams don't collapse like that. So I think that is the reason why these games have been so great. We don't know what we're going to get tomorrow, especially, I think, in Philly. Tonight, I feel more comfortable with the Nets. But last night, I am stunned by the Clippers. I'm from LA. You're from LA. Like, we know the history of the Clippers. They have choked their entire franchise history all the time. As much as possible, they have done the most Clipper thing possible. And this series, they just didn't.
Think about this number. Think about this number. Before last night, in games where they had an opportunity to move on to the Western Conference Finals, they were 0-8.
Yes.
They were 0-8 in games, including, of course, three straight losses to Denver last year. 0-8, where if they win the game, they're on to the Western Conference Finals. Two of those are 3-1 series leads that they blew. And they're down. Think about that. Like you said, it was rocking at Staples Center. So finally, here in California, we get up to speed. You know, down in San Diego, they had the Padres at 40,000 packed into Petco. Dodger Stadium was packed. Got a lot of fans out at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. But Staples Center was rocking last night. And how do the Clippers respond? They don't even show up. I mean, when Mitchell hit the three to put them up 25, it's 75 to 50 in the third quarter. And it was just like, okay. Because I don't know where you stand on this whole Kawhi Leonard situation, this knee sprain, and just what's going on. My gut feeling is, known on his history, is that it's, again, load management. Like, I'm not going to get back there until they absolutely need me to win. And I'm thinking, all right, they lose this game, he'll definitely show up for Game 7 in Utah. We'll see now because, obviously, they've moved on. But to be down 75-50 and then Terrence Mann!
Yeah.
Who is this guy? 39 points? Are you kidding me?
The Clippers were 13 of 17 from 3 points, 3-point line in the second half. It's remarkable what they did. Look, I want to give them credit, right? We saw Terrence Mann step up, and Paul George maybe has two best games in the postseason in his career the last two nights. Jackson as well stepped up. The Clippers, but this is what we said about the Jazz all year, right? Can the Jazz do it? Yes, they're the best record in the NBA. But there was something about them we didn't buy into, and we didn't buy into it for a reason, right? Because they blew this series. When Kawhi Leonard goes out, all of us thought, and I think rightfully so, the series is done. Jazz are going to take over. And what happened is, I don't know if it's mentally they weren't prepared. I think Ty Lue did a great job as a Clippers head coach of exploiting matchups, especially
absolutely
getting Gobert kind of out of the paint and making
you
him have to
the
dart out there.
See the difference between him and Doc Rivers?
Yes. And that's obviously a big plus. I think Ty Lue will now get the love he probably deserves a little bit more than he did when he was in Cleveland.
Yep.
And it's remarkable what they did. I'm stunned. I was driving home last night, listening to the game on the radio in the second half mostly, because I was looking at the first half score. I was like, yeah, this is expected. I expected after a big game five without Kawhi. Okay, the first game without Kawhi, Paul George had game of his life. You know, the big high of that. And we know that in those type of situations, your team kind of picks himself up, right? The first game. The second game, though, most of the time, they're down 25 in the third quarter and they lose. And I thought it was over. And again, they made all their threes. Jazz defense wasn't good. And the Jazz live and die by the three. In the last two games, in the second half, they cannot make threes.
Well, after the first two games where they're down 2-0, by the way, history made. First team ever, not only just consecutive series, but two series in the same postseason, that a team's been down 2-0 and won two series like that in the same postseason, never happened in the history of the NBA. So the Clippers make history there. But I'm watching Paul George, those first two games when he really didn't show up at all, and all you're thinking is that this is just going to repeat itself, that Paul George is just not the guy to step up in these big games. Well, he has stepped up. He needed help in the game five on the road against Utah. Reggie Jackson showed up, Moore showed up. But this Terrence Mann story is unbelievable. So now all of a sudden you look at the Clippers and you're thinking, all right, if they can get Kawhi back at full strength, they're the best team on paper. They really are that deep.
In the West or overall?
I think overall, if Kyrie cannot return for the Nets.
Yes.
And Harden obviously is not 100%. Yes. Right now, assuming, and this is a big assumption, that Kawhi will come back, they're the best team. They have the most talent, and they have a coach that's won a championship before.
The thing that's maddening about the Clippers is that they've had this talent all along and just don't play up to that level of the talent.
Right.
And I think that when you and I played on poor teams before, when you kind of break through that wall, and they break through the wall to make it to the first ever finals, Western Conference finals they've ever made, kind of that weight is lifted off your shoulders and you play freer. Now, again, if Kawhi's not back, I think the Suns win the series, but we don't know. But the Clippers are going to play even more loose now because they're playing with house money. Their starter's out, their best player's out, and then they're made this far before. Their fans are happy, their owner's happy, and now they get to play a Suns team who is young at most places. Obviously, have Chris Paul. But the Clippers, to your point, more talented, and they're better, and they should win.
But Kawhi Leonard, it made it clear before he went down with the injury, I'm not here to get to the conference finals.
I know he's not.
He is the X factor to get you to that next level.
But you know,
because he knows how to get it done.
But you know that when there's a team who has a long history of losing when they should win or just losing in general, when you get that weight lifted off your shoulders, you play freer. Right?
Right.
Even though these guys and Steve Ballmer, the owner, had nothing to do with the past, right? Nothing to do with the past. You still, there's still that weight on the program. It's lifted now.
I have to laugh at Ballmer.
He is,
by the way, having covered enough Clipper games when he first came in as the owner, what do you see on TV is exactly who this guy is, all right? You have to understand this guy has $60 to $65 billion in his bank account. He could literally buy the entire NBA. He is worth more than every other owner in the league combined, and it's not even close. And after the game yesterday, I mean, he's all excited. But as I saw Paul George walking into the locker room, and Bomber's like jumping up behind him, started like grabbing him, and George is not even turning around. He's like who let this fan in that got off the court and came in? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe you should show this guy a little more respect. I mean, he is paying you an insane amount of money. But the Bomber just doesn't seem to care. I mean, this guy is just having the time of his life. What do you do with you have $65 billion in your bank account?
You go cheer on the sidelines like you don't care anyone's watching you, which is exactly what he does.
He does.
And again, I mean, he's paid for this team. He put this team together.
Yep.
And also, I think in his mind, maybe in the back of his mind, they want a new arena. Winning helps you get a new arena.
Yeah.
And the
but
more
does it
they
build
do,
a fan base? I want to get on this on the other side here. This whole dynamic, I mentioned it when we were on with LeVar, TJ, and Plax. Just talking about the potential, and it's a very real potential now, of a Nets-Clippers NBA Finals where neither one of these teams is all that beloved in the cities that they play in. What kind of factor could that be? We'll talk about that coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz. Hey, question. Is your dad's razor older than you are? Get him something new for Father's Day. A DSE 6 blade razor. Perfect for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you as part of a gift set now at dollarshaveclub.com/Jonas. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Jonas. All right, so after the Clippers move on to the Western Conference Finals, they'll face the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, just quickly, sidebar on that series right now, the status of Chris Paul, how much does that have an impact on Phoenix? Can they win against the Clippers without Chris Paul?
Well, we saw when Chris Paul was out against the Lakers that they didn't have the leadership on the floor, right? Booker wasn't that guy. So
right.
Are we saying Kawhi's in or out for the Clippers?
Well, let's say both Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard are out. Then what? Advantage
Clippers.
Who?
Clippers, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just better.
They're just a better team.
Yeah, they're a better
That's
team.
The
and,
whole point.
And they have guys who've been here before, who played in these big series before. You put Booker and Ayton, and they, without Chris Paul, they're not used to this situation,
Remember,
not used to this environment.
Remember, the Suns hadn't been in the playoffs in, what, 12 years?
And so, so if Paul's out, which again, it seems like maybe game one he's out and he's in the protocol, but that's it. I mean, he should be fine otherwise.
Well,
and also, I think Phoenix hasn't played in a while. And I don't know if that's – I think that's probably bad for a younger team.
Without that experience.
To have to sit there and wait while the Clippers are feeling very good. Now, if Chris Paul is healthy and Kawhi's out, I think this is a quick series for the Suns. I think the Suns win this series. If Kawhi's in there, then obviously I'll lean Clippers. But if Kawhi doesn't play, I do not expect the Clippers role players to play this well. Kind of getting a break, all the praise heaped on them, right? Terrence Mann today is getting all the love. I don't expect them to play as good in the new series.
Well, if you look at the Suns, they took advantage of a Laker team once Anthony Davis went down.
Yes.
They took advantage of a Denver team that was down their number two player in Jamal Murray.
Yes.
And now they may have the added bonus of playing a Clipper team without Kawhi Leonard. So sometimes you can sort of skate through. It's all about matchups. But I think Chris Paul's absence in game one, even if Kawhi doesn't play for the Clippers, I think advantage Clippers in that game, that could turn around. Obviously, if the Clips win that game, they would get the home court advantage. All right, the potential, though, of a Clippers-Nets matchup in the NBA Finals is just over the top when you consider this. In New York, I know this. I've been to New York many times.
You
You've been
to
New York.
You don't have to be in New York to know this.
But
what you're
you
about
don't.
To say.
New York is Yankees. It's the Knicks. It's the Rangers. It's the Giants.
Correct.
Okay, so the Jets, the Nets, the Islanders, the Mets. I mean, their fan bases, basically, and this holds true here in L.A. with the Clippers. I always say this. The L.A. Clipper fans are a.k.a. Laker haters. In other words, if you're not a Yankee
yes.
fan, you migrate to the Mets. If you're not a Knicks fan, you migrate. So when your fan base is essentially haters of the main team
yes.
in the city, that's not what we really call a great fan base. And nothing, by the way, changes that. Even when the Islanders in the early 80s, when an expansion team rattled off four straight Stanley Cups, that's a Rangers city. It's always, and you knew that when the Rangers finally won the cup in 94 with Messier, it was like, oh, all hell breaks
yes.
loose. Same thing here with the Clippers. With all due respect to Steve Ballmer, and I love the guy, I really do, and they could rattle off multiple NBA championships. L.A. will always belong to the Lakers. And even though the Knicks haven't won a championship since Richard Nixon was president, doesn't matter what the Nets do. It's always going to be a Knicks city.
Yes. The way you change that, twofold. One is you know, if the Clippers do a lot of winning, young fans might look at that and be like, oh, it's fun to be a Clippers fan, and they might join the bandwagon. But two, and this is really hard in the NBA, is you have to draft players and have them grow up in the organization and they become your superstars. And that's, I think, how you get more fans engaged in the product. We've seen that the highest rated local broadcast for NBA teams are the ones where homegrown talent is still there. Lakers, Clippers, Nets, ratings. There's no connection. Look, I like the Lakers. I've liked LeBron, but it's different when it's Kobe, who grew up in the organization, right?
Well, with Jerry West, Magic, and Kobe, those were Lakers.
Correct.
For life.
Correct. And so I think that, and that's really hard in the NBA now because of all the player movement.
Yes.
And when you're so good, you don't really draft in the top of the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen now with like Luka and Zion, right? They're like, they're like, I want out already. And so
has Luka gotten every, is he going to get Cuban fired as the owner?
I mean,
the cleaning house over there.
And so that, when you have mercenaries, and again, I'm not against the player movement, but when you have these mercenaries joining teams and joining together, the fans, especially of kind of the second teams, there's not that connection. I have one of my producer on my radio show, not here, my Pac-12 show, he's been a Nets fan his whole life. I've talked a lot about this with him, and he's like, yeah, like, I mean, I'm happy we're winning, but like, I don't really feel like something deep down about this team. They just put it together last year.
Yes.
And he's happy they're winning. I mean, don't get me wrong. He'll celebrate the championship if they win, but there's not that connection. Like when I grew up with Kobe, like, and even Shaq, I mean, to a little extent, felt like a Laker, right? He'd only been in Orlando 4 years. It just, and they don't, that is why these franchises, I think, will never be as beloved as the ones that, you know, the Knicks or the Lakers.
Absolutely. And you have to go through those ebbs, highs and lows. And then if you finally break through and achieve something, you're right. If you go out and just buy a team and they win, and this is why Laker fans have been a little bent out of shape about the LeBron situation. It's not necessarily a knock on LeBron or taking away from the talent he has. It's just like he's not a Laker.
But are the Lakers,
I mean, when his career is all said and done, no one's ever going to say, oh yeah, LeBron James, Laker.
Well, okay, so are Lakers fans willing to tank for 4 years and get a bunch of lottery picks and try to build their team up?
No.
So that's the choice, right? The choice is
you
either hire LeBron James and hire whoever else to come help you out.
Well, that's what happens when you miss the playoffs five straight years, six as LeBron's first year.
You try to draft yourself a LeBron James. Like, those are the choices you have. And the Laker fans and a lot of fans around the NBA for these big teams, they want to win now, and they're not going through the process of a rebuild. And then also, too, look, there's no guarantee if you try to rebuild, you hit on those lottery picks anyways. And so then you're kind of stuck in no man's land again. So that's why I think, as much as you might not like it as a fan, you have to accept that you're going to have to bring players in to win championships.
I just find it always interesting, like in baseball, like the Yankees, after, you know, they ran through their Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, Elson, had that group in the 60s, and they were terrible for a decade. And then George Steinbrenner takes over as owner, and he said, the heck with this. As soon as free agency opened the doors in the mid-70s, I'm buying a team. And Yankee fans were thrilled all of a sudden, and they've never looked back. And then you had the Red Sox for all those years, right? And they were just sort of building players through their system, and it just wasn't good enough. They started winning when they started buying players, when they got, you know, Pedro Martinez and they get Manny Ramirez and everything else.
But the core of that Yankees team, though, was the guys they drafted, though, right?
Well,
it was Jeter, Pettit, Bernie Williams. Like,
I was talking about the 70s and the 90s. Yeah, I mean, you know, Posada obviously was developed into the organization. Pettit, Jeter, Bernie Williams, some of those guys.
But
still, you needed other pieces to get you over the top.
Sure, but there's still that home where, like, I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. The three titles we won were almost all with guys that came up in the system. They added Hunter Pence. Like, they added a couple pieces here and there, but it was great that these guys that kind of rode up in the system, some struggles.
It made it more special, no doubt. When you had Lincecum and you had Posey and you had Mad Bum. I mean, they were drafted guys that became the nucleus, and then you start adding the pieces. I'm all for that as a fan. Look, most fans just want their team to win. I don't care. And I've always said this also, like down in San Diego, the Padres are, you know, they had won nothing, okay? And now all of a sudden they started spending money, right? Now, how about this? They don't have one guy in there, eight guys, regulars, that started in the organization, not even Tatis. Remember, he was acquired in a trade with the White Sox when he was 17 years old. So he wasn't starting. But I said this, if I could guarantee you, you win a World Series.
Yeah.
And the trade-off is you don't make the playoffs. You have five straight losing seasons after that.
Yeah.
Would you do it? And you know what they say? In a heartbeat, just once in my lifetime, I want to feel what it is like to be a champion. And that's where Clipper fans are right now. Nets fans are right now. I don't care. Just once, I would love to celebrate an NBA championship.
The closest I can relate to this is Oregon football, right? We've not won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do anything to win a championship. Like, I just want to say, to your point, one time, that we are champions in college football.
I mean,
I'm a Lakers fan. They've won plenty. I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. You know, for most of my childhood, they didn't win, but they won the three in 5 years.
Now, what were you when they were in the championship game? Did you go to that game?
I went to the first one against Auburn. I did not go against Ohio State. They lost by three.
And you thought they were going to beat Ohio State, I'm sure. Right.
Well, after we had beaten Florida, we
had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback versus their third string quarterback,
and we beat up on Florida State. Right, we won that game like 59-20, and I was super pumped. We come out and we score in the first drive, up 7-0. Then the same old things happened with those Chip Kelly teams.
It would have been different had you been there, Jeff.
Well, our offensive line. So, I don't have a lot of what ifs in my life.
Yeah.
But our 2007 team, Dennis Dixon was going to win the Heisman. We were second in the nation, and as good as Oregon has been, that team, I mean, we had three NFL offensive linemen. We had a tight end who played 10 years. Jonathan Stewart played 10 years. I mean, we had four defensive backs drafted. Like, that team was good. And we would have played a pretty mediocre Ohio State team or LSU team in the championship that year. But yeah, I'd give anything to Oregon. So I understand
right
how fans feel for their team with a championship. And I would take that over, you know, and if they suck for nine more years, fine. But that one championship would be incredible.
Let's take it like now. In fact, on the other side, the possibilities for the Final Four as far as the NBA playoffs are concerned. But first, let's find out what's trending right now. Look who's in the house. Ralph Irvin.
Aloha.
How are you today, Ralphie?
I'm doing great. And it's funny you're talking about, because that's exactly what Bucks fans faced, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, back in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
They traded away their future draft to get John Gruden, and they won the Super Bowl that year. And they're like, okay, we're not going to make the playoffs the next bunch of years, but they got their title.
They got the one title, and then they were able to get Tom Brady and get another title. my favorite is the Marlins. The Marlins have never won a division title, and yet they won two World Series that they bought, is essentially what happened. The Marlins bought the 97 team and the 03 team that won the World Series. Both years they were wild card teams. They've never won a division title, and yet they won two World Series.
And immediately dismantled both teams.
Like it never happened. But they won two World Series.
There's a banner there, and that's all that matters.
Couple banners, yeah.
Well, we have Major League Baseball going on right now. Oakland, a 4-2 lead at the Yankees. They're in the seventh inning. How about this day for Francisco Lindor? Two home runs, five RBI, and the Mets with a 5-1 lead at Washington. They're in the sixth inning. Miami having themselves a day. Adam Duvall, two home runs. He's driven in four, and they have a 6-0 lead over the Cubs. That is in the fourth inning. Now, Euro 2020 going on right now. Spain with a 1-0 lead over Poland. That's in the 31st minute. Germany earlier, a 4-2 win over Portugal. Hungary and France drew at 1 in the day's first contest. U.S. Open going on right now at Torrey Pines. The leaders are Russell Henley and Richard Bland. They're at 5 under par, one shot ahead of Matthew Wolf and Louis Oosthuizen. The leaders will be teeing off about an hour from now, just a little over an hour now from now at 4:35 Eastern time. On the course, Justin Thomas sitting at 1 under par through the first hole. Brooks Koepka 1 under through three holes. Brian Harman 1 under through five holes. Of course, they're all four shots back of the leaders, but those are your low scores that are on the course right now. As we send it back, it is Steve Hartman and Jeff Schwartz.
Do you have a gut feeling on who's going to win the U.S. Open? I mean, I said John Rahm. I know he was the overwhelming favorite. I still like John Rahm. How about you, Ralphie? What do you say?
I do like Rahm. I'm actually, because listening to him talk, I like Bubba Watson as well.
Wow, that would be quite a comeback for Bubba. He hasn't had a top 10 in a major in like a decade.
No, but as you know well, Steve, he plays very well at Riviera.
He does.
Which is, in terms of the grass, very similar to Torrey Pines.
Well, if he putts like he did yesterday, he's definitely going to be in the mix. All right, Ralph, we'll talk to you a little bit later on. So we're looking at potential now. We got a couple of game seven. So let's assume for the moment here, Jeff, that we get the home teams winning. Philadelphia and Brooklyn move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. So look at the four franchises you would have in the Final Four in the NBA playoffs. The Philadelphia 76ers has not won a championship since 1983.
Right.
The Brooklyn Nets have never won an NBA championship. The New York Nets in the ABA with Dr. J won a couple of ABA championships. Okay. The Phoenix Suns were born in 1967. They have never won an NBA championship.
Correct.
And the Clippers were born the Buffalo Braves back in 1970, and this whole franchise had never even made it to the Western Conference Finals,
correct,
much less win a championship. So just based on that, this dynamic of three of the four teams having never won an NBA championship, and the Sixers haven't won one since 1983, what would be the biggest story for the NBA? Which one of those four teams, if it's Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and the Clippers, which one resonates as the biggest story in terms of winning the NBA championship?
Probably the Suns, because everyone wants Chris Paul to win. I feel like that.
Really? Wow.
Well, here's what. Okay. So the Nets, it's just another sign of the super team, right? Like, I don't think the NBA wants super teams to continue to be created and win. And also, too, with James Harden asking out and kind of that whole fiasco and Durant leaving, and Durant kind of being now, you know, winning two championships, having a team up now with a bunch of greats and whatnot. I just think the Sixers...
Well, the Clippers would be like the Nets then because of what they did with Kawhi and Paul George.
And again, I don't think that moves the needle at all in the NBA.
Okay.
None, right? I mean, we talked about the Lakers' town. It doesn't move anything. Except... it might get them a new arena, which would be nice. I think Baltimore would love that. The Sixers is pretty interesting because the Sixers would be kind of redemption for Doc Rivers, who we have yet to touch
correct
upon. And the process of kind of the tank and rebuild.
You remember? They had a run there that was about as bad as any in the history of the NBA.
It gives hope to everyone.
But do people feel sympathetic to a team that was purposely tanking for several seasons to try to get top picks in the draft?
But back to the homegrown talent, you have homegrown talent.
Yes, you do.
And you can hold that up as, look, you can draft guys, you can keep guys, and then you can win a championship. Now, they're not getting Simmons and Embiid back-to-back years if Embiid got hurt, right? So they sucked again.
Yes.
So that's a special situation where you're probably not going to get those guys in back-to-back years. But I think NBA fans want Chris Paul to win a title. And they like watching Devin Booker play and DeAndre Ayton's young and upcoming. Like, I feel like...
Do you think he resonates like that? Really?
I think NBA people want Chris Paul to win, yes. Out of all the teams... Because Philly, again,
I don't think Chris Paul. Look, he's popular amongst players. He's the head of the players' union.
I just see the NBA media, and again, social media is not real life, but just following the NBA media, they all root for Chris Paul, and they all want because of what he's done in his career. Obviously, he has yet to have a title, and to beat the Clippers, by the way, who he was on recently, obviously, and the leadership he provides to the Suns. It's very clear the leadership he provides when he's on the court versus when he's not been on the court. I think NBA fans would be happy Chris Paul won. Again, the Sixers, look, if they win with their point guard not being able to shoot, it'd be utterly remarkable. I don't understand how, and I don't trust them in a finals, and really in an Eastern Conference finals or an NBA finals, when your second best player just can't play the last 2 minutes of a game. Like, how do you trust someone who can't play the last 2 minutes of a basketball game as your number two guy? It's
the whole Ben Simmons situation. And in a lot of ways, Ben Simmons is a reincarnation of Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was a physical guard who was a great playmaker, outstanding defensive player, and he couldn't shoot.
But didn't he learn how to shoot?
That's the point. You know, we have our buddy Doug Gottlieb here at Fox Sports Radio. Doug was one of the best point guards in college basketball history, but he had one problem. Couldn't shoot free throws. I mean, he was under 50% all 4 years in college at Notre Dame and Oklahoma State. And that is a challenge. I talked to Doug, you know, about, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't working on it. It just never happened. He just couldn't step up to the line. And when you're handling the ball at the end of a game and your point guard can't knock down free throws, that really puts you in a bad situation. And right now, Ben Simmons has gone completely off the cliff. I mean, he's shooting 32% in this playoff series.
You look at Jason Kidd, the first 5 years of his career at the foul line, he's under 70%. Now, this is, you know, he's averaging 2, 3, 4 foul shots a game.
Yes.
Later in his career, he's averaging 5, but he didn't get to the line as much as I think Ben Simmons
later in his career.
But even later in his career, he's hitting 82%.
Thank you.
81%, 79%.
He worked it.
And he worked at it. And again,
Magic Johnson, by the way, was the same way. Magic was not a great shooter when he first came to the NBA. By the end of his career, he was a 90% free throw.
And so. I know Simmons is working on it. It just obviously hasn't clicked yet. And when is it going to click? And it's not going to click now. He's not magically going to shoot 90% tonight from the line. So the concern is, right, if you're going down the stretch, he's their second best player, right?
He's an all-star. He makes the all-star team every year. But he was runner-up for defensive player of the year this year.
So how do you trust the team whose second best player can't play the last 2 minutes of a game?
You can't. This was the Lakers' problem with Shaq. You know, when he really started struggling at the free throw line, you couldn't really have him on the court at the end of games because it was the hack of Shaq.
Yeah, except back then, I mean, with the game being so different, you know, his defense was such imposing because, you know, they ran the ball through. It made sense to keep him in the game. But he also scored, you know, 30 points in playoff games. Simmons is not quite there because he's not shooting a three either that well.
All right, I want to get to Doc Rivers for a moment here because I made some strong comments about Doc, and I'll back him up. And like I said, I'm going to preface this by telling you that in dealing with Doc Rivers as a member of the media, you will never find a coach more accommodating to the media than Doc Rivers. Win or lose, he is there to answer your questions. He's not going to get snippy with you. Thoughtful answers. There's a reason the media loves Doc Rivers. But if you look at his coaching record, this is his 22nd consecutive year as a head coach in the NBA. His very first season in Orlando, he took over one of the worst teams of all time, and they got a 500 record, and he was named Coach of the Year, deservedly so. But if you look at his track record, whether it was in Orlando, then he goes to Boston. The year before they acquired Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen to create the super team, they were 24-58, and the next year they won 66 games in the NBA championship. That team with Pierce and with Allen and Garnett, they only made it back to the NBA Finals one time, and they got progressively worse. Then he goes to the Clippers, where he inherited a 55-win team from Vinny Del Negro, and they stalled. All those years, they stalled. First year, they get rid of him. Ty Lue gets him to the conference finals without Kawhi Leonard. He is just an insanely mediocre coach, and where it tells is, can you make adjustments when things are not going well? And time again, Doc Rivers has failed in playoff series where something goes awry for his team and he can't figure out how to get out of the hole. Obviously, last year was that prime example. That Denver series was unbelievable. How did they do this? It kept blowing these double-digit leads. And you're thinking, you can't do this every game. Like, this can't be happening. And he couldn't turn it around. And this is why going into this last game for Philadelphia and the fact that the Hawks have taken him to a game seven.
I mean, and I give them credit for winning last night. I thought the Hawks would win that game, especially when they were up early. I know people think sometimes that we in the media or whoever else, We take too much stock in what people say. But when Doc Rivers before the game came out and said something to the effect of like, "Yeah, I think we're ready," but you really don't ever really know until they play. I'm like, oh my God! Even if you think that, why are you saying that out loud?
Because what he says that is, I don't really have control of this team. In other words, it's bad. Your team should be ready. That's why you're there.
But that's my point. Is when you say things like that, it leads me to believe, A, you don't trust your team. B, and this is even worse, you're trying to basically take the blame off of you when you lose, right? I tried my best to get them ready, but I just don't quite know. They do their own thing. And I think, obviously, in-game adjustments, it's just not what his forte is, right? I think we saw the difference between what Ty Lue has done with the Clippers, with this basically the same team that he had last year, right? And the adjustments he's made in game, and that's not what, Doc Rivers does well.
All right. On the other side, we'll continue on with a little NBA talk right now. One of the teams that is not still alive, the Lakers. And the Lakers realize we need to make a major change, and they have. But it's not who you think it is. We'll give you an update coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz here. Watching some of the golf going on right now. Still got a ways to go before the leaders go off. Third round of the U.S. Open. This is at a course that I'm all too familiar with. Torrey Pines. I've been out there dozens of times over the years. And it is playing extremely difficult. They have that Kikuyu grass going up there. And I can tell you from my own experience, if you never hit out of Kikuyu grass, you play golf, you have never experienced anything like it. It is like barbed wire. When it is thick, it is unbelievable.
Sergio had a shot, I believe that's Sergio, about a 50-foot, a 50-yard, whatever, a chip. And it hit the green. You know, the green's like a, you know, hard as can be. Off the middle of the flagstick and rolled all the way back to where he was standing. That's right.
You know,
how
do you hold it together when you think about golf?
These guys look miserable.
When you think about golf, like this is your living, and especially if you're in a major golf championship where you win, it changes everything for you. That is what changes the dynamic if you are known as a major golf champion, and you're going to hit roughly 280 shots right over the course of 4 days. And you go back over your round and you lose by one shot. Can you imagine going back over 4 days of like you missed a putt, you lipped out how many putts? Three or four putts. One of those goes in. I don't know how they keep their heads together. It's just mind-boggling.
And they look miserable. Like when you watched, the only guy that doesn't look miserable is Dick Bland, who's leading. Like he's the one that doesn't look miserable.
This guy's 48 years old. He just won his first ever tournament in Europe. He's telling like all time record. He's only played in four majors ever.
And he looks like he did my taxes a month ago. Like he looks like so unassuming.
I'm interested to see how he holds up.
And he played some great golf yesterday.
All right, I got a quick question. So the Lakers have made a move, and apparently the reason that they are not still playing is their trainer. So they promoted this woman named Nina Tsai to head trainer 2 years ago, and they told her bye-bye. See you later. So, okay, so much for progressive. So when over the course of your career and maybe in conversations with others, how much of an impact can a trainer have on the actual health of your team?
A lot. I will say I can't speak for NBA players. I feel like, you know, a guy like LeBron, Anthony Davis, they have their own people. And that's what a lot of us in the NFL do too. We have our own people. But you know, obviously, you know, the trainer sets kind of a rehab program for you if you get hurt. Where I think it's not talked about enough with injuries is strength, is the strength coach. It's like what you do in the weight room. Now, obviously the NBA is different than the NFL as far as how much you're doing there, but it has to be a partnership between what you need from the strength department, what you need from the trainers, and what you need for your body. And those have to be combined. And look, LeBron hurting himself is not the trainer's fault, sprained ankle. AD, I don't know, he's always hurt. Like that's not the trainer's fault either.
Well, let's stop right there. Because the AD situation, from what a lot of people say, when you have natural gifts, and he has such a unique background in the game of basketball because he was such a late bloomer growing.
He was a point guard.
He was a 6'3 point guard and suddenly a 6'11. And he had the point guard skills. But a lot of people, when you physically are just so much better than everyone, maybe you tend to not work hard, or maybe you're not doing enough in the offseason.
Correct. I agree
to
with
keep
that.
Your body ready. And so, with Anthony Davis, this was something that was his problem in New Orleans.
And maybe they don't think she's doing a good enough job with, again, the rehab technique she's using, or they're trying to scapegoat her for just a bunch of different problems they've had as far as injuries. The problem with the NBA was a short offseason. We all know that. The players know that. The players have acknowledged that. That is the issue, not the Lakers trainer. Now, we might find out more. Maybe she was doing something she shouldn't have done. I don't think so. But I think in different sports, the trainer, I think in NFL, with the amount of injuries we get and the amount of wear and tear, they're probably not more important, but they have more power than an NBA trainer would.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting offseason, obviously, for the Lakers. Are they going to make some big moves?
What are they
going
to do?
Like, well, I don't know. Do you re-sign Dennis Schroeder for $20 million a year? Or do you re-sign Andre Drummond for $20 million a year?
You trade all the draft picks you don't have for Zion.
Okay.
We can't have Zion? Give me Zion. Zion wants out of New Orleans. Bring him to L.A. Let's do it. Come on, Lakers.
By the way, that is something I want to get to also in the next hour, just how
year two is
unbalanced
asking for
the NBA is. Unless you have an owner that's willing to spend the money, how do you keep these guys, right? I mean, you got Charlotte down there with LaMelo Ball, made Rookie of the Year. He didn't want to stay there. I mean, he wants to be like the point guard for the Knicks or something like that, where you get a little extra, you know, attention and everything else. Not everyone is Giannis, where they're more than comfortable to stay in Milwaukee. All right, we have that. Plus, it's a big week in Major League Baseball. That sticky stuff, they're going to force it. We'll tell you about it coming up next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, rolling on this Saturday, Hartman and Schwartz with you. Quick questions, get ready for Father's Day tomorrow. Is your dad's razor older than you are? Get him something new for Father's Day. A DSC six-blade razor is the perfect gift for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you, or as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/Jonas. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Jonas. Do something nice for dad. You know, he's worked his ass off. I'm talking about myself right now. And, you know, do something nice for dad. And how old are your kids now, Jeff? What are they?
They'll be 5 and 7pretty soon.
Okay, so when your kids get to be my kids' age, all in their 20s, are you going to expect more as a dad, or what do you think?
I haven't thought that far
ahead. Have you done a lot of special things for your dad over the years on Father's Day?
On Father's Day, I don't know specifically on Father's Day, for his 60th birthday?
Right.
60th birthday, I surprised him with World Series tickets to the Giants.
Do you and your brother battle, like, who does more for dad, or...
No, we do not know, but
we
Royals Giants World Series Game 4.
Mm-hmm.
I bought tickets. I flew him up from L.A.
Nice.
Put him at a hotel. Went to the game. Mm-hmm. Giants won 11-4. Yes, I've done nice things for him.
I did a lot of these stuff. I had access through friends of mine, you know, floor seats for games or extra special tickets. You know, and I took him along. I wanted to share all this stuff. You know, you got access to with your dear old dad.
But specifically for Father's Day, I don't remember doing anything. Listen, I'm flying tomorrow for most of the day.
Right. And there's going to be a... when you get back, right? The whole family's going to be there.
Happy
Father's Day. Welcome home, Dad.
I get back at like 8 p.m., so I don't even know. And I just saw, not that anyone cares, but I just saw a tweet about like bad weather tomorrow in the South, and we're going to be delayed. It's just going to be a wreck. I'm already preparing for like the worst case scenario trying to fly back home.
Well, every time you come back home, and I call this your home because this is where you grew up. And you enjoy the weather that we have here. It was a little hot last week, but then it's cooled off a little bit. But how difficult can it be to go back to where you are? Well, I mean, I know you love your home in Carolina, and that's where your wife's from and everything else.
I'll tell you how easy it is. So after we're done here, I have to drive about 45 miles, essentially.
Right.
Currently speaking, it'll take an hour and a half. So I will look forward to driving that same amount of distance back home in 37 minutes. So that's what I will look forward to the most.
By the way, we were both coming in. I told you the nightmare I had coming in today.
Yeah,
one accident. How is there an accident, right?
How do you drive that tiny car, by the way?
Well, how do I drive that car?
Yeah, the little tiny car.
I love that car. I just love it. I really do.
But you can't have anything else in there. Just you, your body, and that's it.
Jeff, when we're done here, I want you to sit in that car. Have you sat in my car yet?
I've sat in a Mini Cooper before. I fit in a Mini Cooper.
Absolutely. My buddy, Brady Papinga, you know Brady's a big guy. I mean, yeah, you will fit in that car nicely. There's an insane amount of headroom. When you're in the car, even a man your size, I'm telling you.
But driving around, you have to feel like you're going to get crushed
by any... I don't feel that at all. In fact, yesterday was one of those days. So I have to come up from San Diego on a Friday afternoon. You can imagine the nightmare. And I'm just zipping in and out of people all over the place. And the other thing is it's got a Mercedes engine, so you go 90 miles an hour quite easily. I know it sounds weird because, like, the first time I went in that smart car out on the freeway, I thought, my God, I'm actually driving a golf cart on the freeway.
Correct.
But once you – I love my car. I do. My boys are sitting there in their BMWs and everything else.
Yeah, I got a truck,
Their old dad's got his
I got a truck, which is, I mean, just – it's a gas-guzzling thing, but I plainly –
You know who was driving a smart car was Ocho Cinco.
Really?
Chad Johnson now, yeah. He drives one proudly.
The same car you have.
Same car I have. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you got?
Well, Iowa's Sam, back from Iowa,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, I am. Fresh back from Iowa. Do you drive this for environmental reasons or for because it's cheaper or what?
Mine's a gas model. It's not even an electric car.
Your smart car.
So my smart car was the last gas model smart car they made and sold in the United States in 2016.
Why is it a smart car then?
That's smart because I can...
Mileage?
It does get good mileage.
It's half the size of a regular car? I don't know.
Yeah, you can parallel park a little easier.
Yes, I mean, you can literally, you can turn on a dime. Like there's no such thing as a U-turn.
That's the thing that, like, I don't ever think to myself, oh, I need a car that turns on a dime.
There are times when you are trying to
here,
maneuver
in, Los Angeles,
in
sure.
a bar. I can get in everywhere. Like, there is no obstacle. In fact, in this building here, the multi-level parking lot we have outside of the Fox Sports Radio studios, on the second level in the corner is one that says compact. But you were literally looking at this compact space like no one could fit in that space. I take it every time because my smart car fits perfectly.
There were also plenty of other spaces today you could have taken.
I don't want those spaces.
Steve,
I want my smart car space.
Steve, you know those artists down at the pier who will draw you in a cartoon?
Yeah.
Like in a car?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually just you in real life. It's like your giant head sticking out of a tiny little car.
I love it. I love the car. I absolutely love that car. All right. I don't know how much I'm going to love this week in Major League Baseball. This is going to get tricky. And by the way, we're sitting here with... Well, it's going to get sticky. That's a good word for it. Jeff Schwartz, as you know, folks, if you've been listening to the show, he is a diehard Giants fan. They have had an unbelievable season.
Yeah.
Like, nobody in the possibility saw this happening. The Giants, a team that went into the season, Jeff, with a mindset that we were basically dumping the season.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of expiring contracts, the Crawfords, the Belts, the Poseys. You know, they probably get some, you know, prospects from teams that like to get a veteran down the stretch. And they picked up a bunch of pitchers, Gosman and Wood, on one-year deals because, well, you got to have starting pitching to get through a season. All these guys are having career years.
Yeah.
The team has been absolutely dynamite from the get-go. It's going to be very interesting when they get to the trade deadline. If they're still where they are right now at the end of July, are you suddenly buyers?
You got to buy some bullpen arms. That's about it. I wouldn't do more than that. Yeah, best record in baseball. I keep waiting for it to stop. Like, I keep waiting for this to be over. And the worst part is, best record in baseball, but still only a game or two up in the division.
Well, you have the Dodgers and the Padres. They're going to be tough teams to beat off. And the one thing the Giants have taken advantage of is a very easy schedule.
Yes.
The Padres, for instance, have played twice as many games this year against teams whose records are 500 or better. But we were talking about this before the show. Giants are doing what they're supposed to do. You got to beat the teams they're supposed to beat. And that's exactly what they're doing.
And this is a thing in sports that I make an argument of this often when someone has an easy schedule and, you know, they're a good team. And obviously football, what I stick to a lot, you know, they played an easy schedule. Okay, they're supposed to win by 3 touchdowns then. Like, it's okay for them to blow out bad teams. And then when they play a good team and they play a close game and they lose or, you know, they win that game, then people obviously kind of believe they can do it. But if you're a good team, good teams blow out. Now, in baseball, it's different to blow someone out. A win is a win in baseball. But in football, if you are a good team, you're supposed to blow out the bad teams. That's a sign that you're a good football team. Now, it might not be obviously the sign you win a Super Bowl, but yeah, you're supposed to be the teams, if you're a good team, that suck. And the Giants are doing that so far.
They are, absolutely.
Especially in Arizona.
Ooh. Now, the big question now as we move on to this baseball season, and now that this, if you don't know this already, we've been talking about the sticky stuff, but the actual enforcement of it starts Monday. Okay, that's the first day in which umpires have been told, this is when we start the process of challenging these pitchers if they feel like some cheating is going on with the sticky stuff and everything else. And I think the Major League Baseball pitchers have a really good argument right now. They really do. Because if you've ever held a baseball, even though they're rubbed up before the games by the umpires to give them some kind of traction, they are still rather slick. And pitchers are saying, look, there's a difference between using something to give you a better grip or abusing the grip so that you put extra stuff on where you're creating this, you know, hyper spin on the ball. But the idea of eliminating any of that, and we had the Glasnow situation where he said, okay, I want cold turkey. Like, I want to start. I'll admit, I've been using stuff I always have. But I went cold turkey and actually pitched one of my best games of the year. The next morning, I wake up. Suddenly, I am feeling pain in my arm in spots that I've never had before. Because even though he said I got long fingers, I had to put the ball deeper into my hand to have the same type of grip. Yeah. And I'm suddenly using different muscles. Now, if you do this in the off season where you could adjust to it, it's one thing. But for them to decide literally at the halfway point of the season, we're going to enforce a rule, by the way, that's been on the books for years. It's affecting about 90% of the pitchers out there. What happens if we get injuries across the board?
Well, it is affecting pitchers. And it's worth pointing out the difference in the things people use. Glasnow was talking about, and plenty of pitchers have mentioned this, right? So the ball's rubbed up, and they're rubbed up, you know, inconsistent, right? There's not one specific way people do it. There's not one specific person who does it. And when they rub the ball up, obviously, they just kind of put the mud in, and then it dries. And when you get the ball, it's not even really that rubbed up anymore, and it's really, really dry, and it comes off pretty easily, so you kind of get a white baseball again. So most people, or most pitchers, right, that have done this for a while, it's sunscreen mixed with rosin, right? Those are two things you can obviously, you wear sunscreen for the game,
right?
And the rosin bag is on there, and that gives a little bit of tackiness, right? Maybe some rosin and some sunscreen, some pine tar together. That gives enough grip to where you can throw the ball, but doesn't increase your spin rate,
correct,
or throw the ball harder or break your curveball faster, harder, I should say, whatever it is. The spider tack is the new stuff they've created. That adds RPMs to your curveball. It adds RPMs to your fastball, so you throw faster. Your off-speed pitches break a little bit more. That's what they're trying to eliminate. The problem is baseball did all or nothing, right? They're like, you cannot use anything now.
Right. Well, you have the rosin bag, but that's it.
But doesn't most guys say that all the rosin bag does is it takes moisture off your hand.
Correct.
It doesn't make the ball or your hand stickier.
So, although I did see Trevor Bauer showed some demonstration of using rosin and then something else that was deemed legal and literally showing a baseball stuck to his hand.
Yeah, he was doing that the other day, yeah.
Right.
So,
and he says, by the way, how do you know that I'm doing something illegal? Because all I'm using is what's legally allowed to me and the ball can stick to my hand.
So the issue, of course, again, is that baseball is they shouldn't be doing this now. It's going to be very selective enforcement. Umpires don't want to do this.
No.
Umpires don't want to be the bad guys.
Well, and also you don't want to lengthen the game. So the umpires have been told, if you can you do it between innings?
But then you're going to have to come back from break, and dudes are going to be ejected, and you have to explain why another pitcher's warming up, and a guy got ejected. And then obviously, if you eject someone on the Dodgers, the Dodgers can be like, hey, eject the other pitcher on the Giants who's using it too. So you eject. Do you really want to eject multiple pitchers in a game?
No.
For, again, a thing that fans do not care. I'm a baseball fan, okay? A big baseball fan. I did not know what spider tack was till a month ago. Like, I just always assume pitchers are using stuff.
Yeah.
And whatever.
And they have been using stuff since the beginning of time.
It's never bothered me.
It doesn't bother any. That's the whole point.
It doesn't bother anybody.
You know what's going to bother people? If other pitchers like Glasnow get hurt.
Or
because they're suddenly having to adjust their whole pitching style to not have whatever it is they use as an adhesive to have a better grip on the ball. That will have an effect on fans.
Or if balls start slipping out of guys' hands and hitting players.
Well, that's the scariest part of it. That's why hitters are backing up the pitchers.
And I don't think, well, they're also doing that because their teammates are doing it too, right?
The
issue with baseball and there is, to me, and again, I'm a baseball fan, so it's not an issue to me, but when they say they want more hitting, I don't know how many people that watch baseball or bring baseball fans there that need to see home runs, whatever. It's approach to the plate. That's the problem. It's not the balls. It's the approach to the plate now where it's all or nothing, right? It's either you hit a home run, you strike out, and that's it. if the approach changes at the plate, we probably would get more hits. But that's not the way things are now.
All right. On the other side, there is a major story brewing across the board in sports. It's amazing how different the sports world is today as opposed to where we were exactly a year ago. Doesn't mean we've gotten through the woods. We got a major development right now concerning the NFL and COVID testing coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz. Okay. Yesterday, I went to my TV station here in L.A., and I usually just work Saturday, Sundays, but I was in on a Friday, saw our new news director, and I walked in his office to say hi, and he was writing out a memo. And I said, what are you working on? He goes, I got this memo out to everybody that says, and pretty much I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah.
If you check the box saying you're fully vaccinated, you no longer have to wear a mask inside this building.
Which is most of the country now, yes.
And so, but if you aren't fully vaccinated, you are still required to wear a mask in this building.
Correct.
So we have a similar situation across the sports lexicon right now. The NFL in particular, where there are many players that feel like they're going to get penalized since they have chosen not to get vaccinated, that they're going to have to live by an entirely different set of rules from the players who are vaccinated. There's no law that says you have to get vaccinated. And even when I talked to our news director and he talked about people that choose not to get vaccinated, he's saying, hey, you know, more power to you. But here are the rules. We have one rules set of rules for those that are vaccinated, and we have a different set of rules for those that are not vaccinated. Now, I don't know the percentage of just NFL players that are choosing, because I'll put it this way. The vaccinations have been out there long enough where if you're not vaccinated right now, that's been up to you. Anyone could get vaccinated, correct, obviously, at this point. So the fact that you're not vaccinated is a conscious decision that you have made. So in the NFL, I don't know what the percentages are right now.
It varies by team and actually, interesting
overall,
enough,
do you think it's 70-30? Where do you think we are?
I think it's less than that, but I'll tell you what. The teams where their leaders have come out and said they've gotten it are higher. So the Chiefs, like the Falcons, where Matt Ryan and Pat Mahomes have come out and said, I've taken the vaccine, we should take the vaccine. The Steelers, I've seen, have a very high percentage of players vaccinated.
Do you think 25% of players are still?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's use that number.
It depends. But again, like Pete Carroll said, his entire staff is vaccinated. They're close to 100%.
I'm just talking about the players.
Yeah, I think the players are
75-25?
No, I think it's probably 65-35.
Okay, now 65-35 is a problem.
Or 60-40. I think it's...
All right, what is the role the union can play in this?
So the union and the NFL agreed upon protocols for vaccinated or unvaccinated individuals. This is for the training camp and preseason. And it's as close to basically mandating a vaccine as one can get without actually doing it because of the restrictions that are put in place. So, for example, fully vaccinated players, no daily testing, no mask, no physical distancing, no quarantine after high exposure risk. High exposure to COVID, high risk exposure, to COVID. No travel restrictions. You can eat with your teammates. You can
In other words, no restrictions, period. You can live your life as you please.
You can go see your family, friends, right, offsite. Not vaccinated players require testing every day, have to wear masks, have to physically distance, have to quarantine, travel restrictions, only 15 players in the weight room, can't use the sauna, can't use the steam room. And look, here's why they're doing it. Money. They want to play their season without any disruptions like they had last year. And if more players are vaccinated, they won't have to worry about that this year.
Well, I'm curious about, if the numbers are still, you know, 2/3 to 1/3, how does that play in a locker room?
Well, so this is the question, right? Because I think it's a huge competitive advantage for teams that are vaccinated.
Yes.
Because teams that are vaccinated will be able to have a lot more bonding, be able to have a lot more hands-on, will be able to enjoy each other in the locker room. There won't be this kind of fracture between, I'd imagine there are players who very strongly feel about vaccinations and players that obviously do not, and there won't be that kind of fracture between between players who have to wear a mask and players who don't. And overall happiness of the team, right? If you have a third of the team who can't eat with you, who can't shower with you, who can't travel with you. How fun is that?
Well, okay, let's I'm going to use the offensive line. Okay, so you got five guys on your offensive line. Let's say three guys are vaccinated and the other two aren't, and have no intention.
It would be tough because
exactly. I mean, I would say
get vaccinated, which again, it's your own personal choice.
And I say no, I'm not going to get vaccinated. Now we got a problem.
They're the ones you have to deal with. Again, I wouldn't be concerned about getting COVID, but it's the issue of obviously the kind of distancing, right?
Right.
So in the meeting room, am I allowed to be with them? Are they on Zoom meetings still? And you know, a lot of the camaraderie, you know, chemistry is built not really. You know, kind of, it's on the field a little bit, but really it's more camaraderie off the field, I feel like, right? When you become closer as a friend and you get to really know the person. And a lot of that happens in the locker room, the steam room, sauna room, the weight room, all these places where if you're not vaccinated, you're physically distanced from your vaccinated teammates. So it'd be really tough if my teammate, the guy I played next to, I couldn't even talk to, like, I couldn't be with him in the locker room.
No, that's the point.
It feels to me like the NFL protocols are put in place to make it tough on the players who are not vaccinated to where they show up to training camp and they get vaccinated.
Well, for those players that are choosing not to get vaccinated, can they make enough noise
in
the union to say, what the hell is this?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that players are trying to do that.
There is a clear distinction between being vaccinated and not being vaccinated.
So here's the thing, right? I struggle with as a former player and as someone who was part of the union for a long time, is the union's supposed to look out for the good of the players. And that doesn't mean the good of all the players. It means the good of the majority of the players, right? That's their job.
But if you're talking a third of the players, and then we're not talking 10%.
But the majority of players have been vaccinated, and they want that to be the season to go on as scheduled. I'm telling you, man, if you have a team who has an entire position group who's not vaccinated, we'll see. We saw last year, right? The Broncos had no quarterbacks for a game.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that around the NFL. Some places had no running backs for a game, or one running back, or one wide receiver. You know, if you're the Buffalo Bills right now, and it feels like their wide receiver room might not be, the vaccination numbers aren't very high. If you are the Buffalo Bills and you enter a big weekend and one of those guys gets COVID because they're testing every single day, and that wide receiver room is out for that game, it's a big competitive, especially in a division, in a conference where obviously you want the one seed because it's very important, and now you've lost a game because your wide receivers can't play.
I always go back to that Denver situation. You know, the NFL.
Well, they made a point with the Broncos.
Exactly the point. I mean, the idea that there was a contest, you had a Denver team that wasn't going anywhere. They weren't going to go to the playoffs. And it gave them an opportunity to use them as an example, forcing 100%. Them to bring a wide receiver off the practice squad to come into the quarterback. It was their way of saying, look it, if we're going to get to the finish line,
follow the rules we put in place.
We are going to adhere to these rules, no exceptions, and they made the example of the Broncos that week.
And think about this. You know, the NFL is a conservative-leaning league.
Oh, yes.
And
very much so.
And if they're you know, but they're also about making money. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously, these rules are put in place, these protocols, to help make sure they maximize the money that everyone can make. And I know players are upset about it. There's plenty that have called the PA. But again, I'm telling you, PA is not budging off this. I don't think this is going to change. I'm curious to see what the numbers look like as training camp continues. Coaches have been vocal about, Bruce Arians, Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid have been vocal about trying to get their play, because they understand that the competitive advantage they will have over someone else if they have their players vaccinated.
All right, Cole Beasley, just quickly here. He is one that has spoken out of the Buffalo Bills wide receiver. He had a public service announcement in which he said, everyone, hi, I'm Cole Beasley, and I'm not vaccinated. I will be outside doing what I do. I'll be out in public. If you're scared of me, then steer clear or get vaccinated. Point blank, period. I may die of COVID, but I'd rather die actually living.
I'm living my life. I've had the shot. Cole's just upset with the PA, obviously.
Yes, he is. He would rather retire than get a vaccination. By the way, it's a free country, so if he wants to retire, go for it.
Yeah. Um, I, This is always a tough topic to get into, right? And I'm trying to stay as much as I can away.
Okay, I'm going to let you gather your thoughts.
I
want to get to Ralph. Okay, we'll hold off here because Beasley has made a bold statement here. Let's find out what's trending right now. Let's bring back Ralph Ervin. Hey, Ralph.
I mean, I wanted to hear what Jeff said. Now we're all waiting.
Well, I see that we call a tease. Tease. Nobody sets it up like Jeff Schwartz. Just when he's about to say something, I said, whoa. Before you do, I got to hear what Ralph has to say.
Well, we do have two finals in already for Major League Baseball. The Yankees snap Oakland's seven-game winning streak, coming back to beat the A's 7-5. Francisco Lindor drove in all five Mets runs, game one of their doubleheader, as New York beats Washington 5-1. Right now on the diamonds, Miami shutting out the Cubs 8-0. They're in the sixth inning. Toronto with two first-inning home runs and a 2-0 lead at Baltimore. They're in the second. Boston hits the scoreboard early and has a 1-0 lead over Kansas City. That's in the first inning. Alec Boehm hit by a pitch with the bases loaded. And, yeah, the Phillies take a 1-0 lead over the Giants. That's in the first inning. We're getting so close now to the leaders teeing off at the U.S. Open. Of course, they're playing just a little south of us at Torrey Pines. Your leaders, that's Richard Bland and Russell Henley, sitting at 5 under par, one shot ahead of Louis Oosthuizen and Matthew Wolf. Right now, John Rahm on the course at 3 under par, Bubba Watson at 3 under par. He's on the course, as are Mackenzie Hughes and Kevin Streelman. They're at 2 under par now through two holes. And at Euro 2020, they are in the 74th minute. Spain and Poland tied at 1. Earlier, Germany a 4-2 win over Portugal. Hungary and France drew at 1 apiece. And oh yeah, Game 7 of the NBA playoffs coming up tonight. Eastern Conference semifinals, Brooklyn hosting Milwaukee. That'll tip off at 8:30 Eastern time. As we send it back now, it's Steve Hartman and Jeff Schwartz.
All right, Ralph, thanks so much. And coming up in about 15 minutes or so, Jeff Schwartz will give his bold predictions.
Yes.
On both of these Game 7s in the NBA. So stay tuned for that. All right, let's complete the thought process.
So here's my thing with a lot of the discussion that we're having around this topic is, look, if you're going to have a strong opinion on something, you would think you'd understand exactly how that something worked, right? And like my problem with a lot of the NFL players, and again, I have said nothing about their right to get vaccinated or not vaccinated, the right to have the shot, to live freely, the right to die or get COVID, whatever the players have said. But to not understand how it works, to not understand how the that's what bothers me the most, right? It's like just the not understanding of how it works if you're going to be so against something. And I looked, NFL players,
let me give you a little more of what he said. He goes, I'm not going to take meds for a leg that isn't broken. I'd rather take my chances with COVID and build up my immunity that way, eat better, drink water, exercise, do what I think is necessary to be a healthy individual. That is my choice based on my experiences and what I think is best. If I'm forced to retirement, I will do so.
The thing about when you have an unpopular opinion, right?
Yeah.
Is when people push back at that opinion, a lot of us don't say, and I actually stayed away from tweeting about this yesterday because I just didn't want to deal with it. And you don't have to have an opinion on everything. No one's saying you can't have this choice.
Mm-hmm.
You have a freedom, but the NFL is saying if you choose not get vaccinated as a private business,
right,
these are our protocols. If you don't want to follow them, to his point, you have the right to retire. But like, no one wants Cole Beasley to retire. They want him, no one's telling him to retire. The NFL probably doesn't want him to retire either. Keep playing, buddy. Keep making your money. Help the Bills win a Super Bowl. It's what he said in his statement. But again, the NFL has the choice to come up with the protocols. No one's saying you don't have a choice in this, Cole. No one's saying that. It's just obviously the NFL is making it more difficult for players who are not vaccinated. So that's my whole thing about some of these players' arguments. Like, guys, no one's saying you can't have an opinion. That doesn't give you the right to not have the pushback. When people say to me, well, and I'm going to say to them, like, well, okay, when I give an opinion, I don't want pushback either on anything, on an NFL opinion. It's my opinion. I have the right to my own opinion. Yeah, you do. You don't have the right or the freedom of us not discussing your opinion. Yes.
Question for you, Jeff. What are they going to do 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, where they're like, you have to get the vaccine every year, or like, is this going to be are we going to have Cole Beasley wearing a mask and going through protocol like 5 years from now? Because COVID's not going anywhere.
I think that as we have seen, as more data comes out, as more research comes out, things change. I don't have an answer for that now.
Well, some people get a flu shot every year.
Right. So
I choose not to get a flu shot.
Is Cole Beasley going to be off the hook and just be able to live?
I can't tell you what 3 years will be from now. I mean, obviously the hope is, right, with herd immunity and more people getting vaccinated, that it eventually dies out. Now, there's variants, obviously, right? We know that the variants keep popping up, and some vaccines work better than others in slowing those down. But eventually, if you get to herd immunity, right, it dies out. Like, that's the hope, I think, in this. But yeah, I don't know what will happen 3 years from now. I think the NFL will eventually get to a point where they have different protocols, and they might have different protocols for the regular season. We don't know. This is for training camp in the preseason. That enough players might spark outrage where they change their mind. I doubt they do, but they might change their mind in 6 weeks and have a new policy.
Okay, I know we don't have any doctors here, but actually Iowa Sam is the closest thing to a doctor with your access to doctors.
Yes. Yeah.
So clarify for me as best we can in layman's terms. When we talk about the vaccinations we've had here, basically, all it is a booster to your immune system, right? I mean, is it something that is geared specifically for one virus, or is it just an overall boost to your immune system to help you ward off any kind of virus?
No, well, you're talking about COVID vaccine?
Yes.
No, it's specifically tailored to help you build immunity and fight off the COVID
virus. So it doesn't have any impact?
It won't help you. I don't think it'll help you for the flu, as far as I can concern. I don't think it'll help you for, you know, other viruses out there. It's just for COVID. And it's actually, what it's doing is it's presenting this version of the virus, not actually a virus, to your body, and then your body can use that and then recognize.
But people there are very people that are sick all the time. People say, I always get sick, right? So they have an immune system that apparently is not strong or not geared to the thousands of different viruses that are floating around this planet all over the place. Some people latch onto them. Others people walk through them like they're absolutely nothing. So really, COVID is no different than that, is it?
Well, in the terms of it can be more deadly and can give you more symptoms, and you know there are people that can get sick all the time, and they might get sick with COVID if they're not vaccinated. I mean, Jeff, what you have ideas here or anything to offer in the sense that people just a lot of things play into that though, Steve. Like if you get enough sleep, if you take vitamins,
if they told you you would have to get a vaccine every year for the rest of your life to ward off COVID, your answer to that would be what?
That's what we do, the flu shot. It's a virus, and to your point, I don't get a flu shot every year. It's kind of random when I do.
I don't either.
And so, obviously, look, I think the hope, again, is that if more people get the vaccine, we reach a point where the virus just dies out.
Right.
And then we don't have to take the booster every year.
Well, it's still around.
It's still around, but it's not as prevalent.
Your body can take it on.
And so I don't, again, I don't pretend to know everything. I know sometimes I might come off that way. But again, like to your point, like I don't know in 3 years. I don't know in 6 months what if we're going to have a booster, if there's going to be a new variant around, whatever it is. So right now, these are the protocols the NFL has. And it might change in 6 weeks. It might change tomorrow. It might change in 6 months. We might need a booster. We might not need a booster. I think the Pfizer CEO came out and said, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago that he thinks you'll need a booster eventually. But the NFL has decided to go in this direction because it maximizes how much money they can make.
Well, I'm just going to be interested to see if it divides locker rooms. I mean, that's going to be the difficult part of it. And coaches that are on, you know, coaching a team where suddenly you're realizing, man, I can't have one rule for two-thirds of the team. The other third of the team has got something
else
going
on. That's why coaches are preaching to their players to get vaccinated. This reminds me a little bit of...
Again, if you haven't been vaccinated yet, you have decided, I'm not going to get vaccinated.
Correct. And there's some players who we know have said, I want to know the facts, more facts, and then they're not going to do it anyways.
Well, we don't have any facts. So, what do we know? Do you know? Does anyone have any idea long-term effects here about these vaccinations? Since obviously they're new? No. We don't, obviously.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for people to call them, though, experimental chemicals being injected into you, they did go through clinical trials to get to the point of being released.
Yeah, but we don't know any long-term effects, do we?
Right, but...
We could say the same about COVID, too.
You could say the same thing about a flu shot, but I don't think there's been anything about a flu shot that, you know, could be bad for your future and your health.
I don't know.
We don't know, though.
We don't know, but as far as people are still living into their 80s and 90s.
The reason I'm pushing this is that when you have players that have a lot of questions saying, I need answers, the fact is we don't have answers. We can make an educated guess.
Correct.
But that's the best we got
right now.
But
to Sam's point, though, is that we may not have answers for a little bit of time. So how long does the NFL keep these protocols in place until we have an answer that satisfies the four people? Like, if all three of us might say, I want answers, and we might all have three different answers we want.
Right.
And maybe it does take 3 years to find your answer. Maybe it takes one for mine, and maybe it takes 6 months for yours, Steve. The NFL is going to have to figure out moving forward if this is something they're doing for seasons. Again, I have no idea. Again, the NFL's been flexible. Look, the NBA kind of went out and said, this is our protocols. We're not moving off of them.
Because right.
They started a season kind of in the middle of COVID, and now that it's gone downhill, they have not changed their protocols. I mean, they should. The NFL's been more flexible, right? They've changed things as they've gotten more data.
Well, are they going to change the situation? All of a sudden Cole Beasley has a tidal wave behind him.
Not for the preseason and training camp.
Okay.
They might, again, the regular season might be different, but again, the PA is looking out for most often the majority of players. If the majority have been vaccinated, and maybe they ask the vaccinated players, do you care? Maybe that's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, the doctors might have a different answer, but the players might say, yeah, whatever, like, you know, I'm not worried about getting COVID. If I'm vaccinated, let the players who are unvaccinated be part of the team. Maybe that's the solution, right? Players who are vaccinated say to the NFLPA, we don't mind it. We'll have players around us who are unvaccinated. And look, that's obviously, I go to the grocery store. I do other things. My mask is not on. I'm in North Carolina. I don't know if the person next to me has it or not. I'm not worried about it.
All right, let's get on to the NBA on the other side. We got a Game 7 today. It's going to be the Nets taking on the Bucks tomorrow. Another Game 7. That one, of course, will be the Sixers taking on the Hawks. And also Game 1 tomorrow between the Clips and the Suns in the Western Conference Finals. What are the best plays this weekend in the NBA? This guy right here, Jeff Schwartz, will tell you. Coming up next. Steve Harbin, Jeff Schwartz. Want to thank the crew today. Iowa Sam, back from Iowa, by the way.
Oh, glorious.
Glorious.
Fresh
glorious
strawberries.
Being back or glorious being in Iowa?
Both. I hadn't seen my family for, 16 months to 22 months.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Did you feel right back at home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's strawberry season out there. So these are red and ripe throughout. And just
okay.
The sweetest.
I have been to Iowa 3 times. And all I've seen is one massive cornfield.
It's not all.
Where are the strawberries?
Well, yeah, on our farm.
Really? Your farm specifically have strawberries? I've never seen strawberries in Iowa. Is that commonplace or exclusive to your farm?
You can grow a lot of fruits, but just during the summer season.
A lot of corn.
A lot of corn.
A lot of corn.
It's growing. It's out there.
Good stuff. That's where my sister lives and has lived there for Iowa.
I've seen Iowa from about 40,000 feet.
Yeah, Jeff has no thoughts on Iowa. Yeah. Flyover state.
I will say driving through Iowa is quite a scene. It's so flat. It's unreal.
Go to Nebraska, western Nebraska especially, and eastern Colorado, and you have not seen flat until you go into those portions.
Yeah, Iowa's pretty flat.
Iowa's flat, but they're actually the 16th flattest state in the country.
16th flattest.
You know what the flattest state in the country is?
No.
Guess. This will blow you away.
Let's see.
Just guess a state you would...
Montana.
Well, no.
You asked me to guess a random state. I just told you.
it's
Wyoming.
Florida.
Florida is the flattest state.
Yeah, because northern Florida is very, very flat.
Very flat.
Yeah. There you go. A little trivia for you.
I don't know. Iowa seemed like the flattest state I've
flat,
ever driven
through. It's flat, but it's not the flattest.
I want to thank Ralph Irvin, who, by the way, was giving some golf tips.
I know. I'm intrigued.
Jeff during the break
I want to play more golf.
Listen to Ralph. He's a big-time golfer.
The problem is that I don't have 6 hours... in a day to play golf.
Play 9 holes.
Golf? Yeah, yeah. But here's the thing, and my boys want to get a little more serious with golf. The first thing you need to do is you need to know length of club. In other words, it's hard to play golf on a course unless you actually know when you pull a club out of your bag and you hit it how far it's going to go.
Yep. Well,
you have to establish, okay, this is how far I hit my 5-iron, my 7-iron.
Yeah, so my issue is that I've established that, but it's not consistent, right? So, like, one day I'll go out there and
well, that's
I can
how
hit,
you got to get consistent.
Correct, and I might hit my 7's my favorite. I might hit my 7 really good that day.
So when we watch these guys, they know exactly That's why when they're talking about to like the
oh,
inch,
it's incredible
how far I have to hit
it's
the ball.
Oh,
they know.
I love hearing when they have the mics on these guys and they're talking about like if I hit the specific lip of here and it rolls this way and
they know exactly.
Going, But then some days I might hit it 30 yards shorter and then I'm kind of screwed. So.
I mean, I've had a couple of times playing with an actual professional golfer and it's ridiculous. I mean, they're picking out a spot like that's where I'm going to hit the ball.
I played Pinehurst last summer with Peter Burns, who's at ESPN. He's a former college golfer. And, dude, it was incredible watching him play. He saw this like a 75, 76. It's kind of like not trying very hard. Yeah. I don't know. I shot a 145. Who knows?
And they make it look easy, right?
Like, it's really the approach shots that are incredible. You know,
but you also have to have a short game. You got to be able to roll in a putt.
Yeah, and like the way they were reading the greens and like the around the cup, like if the grass is brown, it means the grass is cut a certain way, and that's the, I was like, oh, this is crazy. I just want to get there in eight.
It's going to require a little practice. Meanwhile, Lita Lap, our incredibly gifted producer, a week ago sporting the mullet of all mullets, is absolutely cleaned up completely because of his. Driver, was this official ID or just a driver's ID?
Right, the real ID.
The real ID. You got the real ID license. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Totally
and he has
different
this
person.
Option. Totally different person from the guy we saw a week ago. But that's him. I mean, he can do that when he got good lettuce. All right, quickly. We got a game today between the Nets and the Bucks. Tomorrow we got two games in the NBA. We got game 7 between the Sixers and the Hawks. Game 1 between the Clippers Suns Western Conference Finals. Jeff Schwartz, what are the best plays this weekend in the NBA?
Is by far Trae Young over. It's been 27 and a half, 28 points. He's hit it 5 of 6 games. Trae Young over 2.5 threes. It's been 2.5. I haven't looked because the game's tomorrow. I hit 5 Trae Young props yesterday. I had him score more points than Tobias Harris. It was a little bit of juice, but it was great. I parlayed some together. Trae Young over props have been great, especially in a game 7 like this. I don't know. A line for that game, not quite. I plan on taking Hawks plus the 7. But tonight, Nets money line, man. I know it's the public favorite. I know everyone's on it. But if I get James Harden even just a little bit better than he was in game 5 and 6, right? He kind of maybe he's playing a little bit more, feeling a little more confident.
He couldn't shoot the ball any worse.
He could not. I mean, the line on that
game is 2.
I get Kevin Durant in a game 7 at home against the Bucks, and like I'm not taking Giannis. I'm not taking.
I don't
Coach
buy
Bond
into the Bucks either. I mean, I'm
I
looking at, even just looking at the line at 2. I'm like,
but yeah. I also thought was it game 5 when the Nets are favored by 2, and I was like, there's no way the Nets should be favored by 17.
No,
the Bucks
were favored going into game 5 because remember we thought Harden was sitting out.
Or was it the other way around? It was one of those games where I was shocked.
The Bucks were favored in game 5 because they had come out that Harden and Kyrie were out of the game.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden Harden shows up. How does that work? Can you do that kind of stuff when you're an NBA team? All right, we'll see how it all plays out. Keep it here on Fox Sports Radio.